guys, welcome back to Met Gala Luncheon. I'm your host, Sarah Van Turenhout, and I'm joined by
Rosalinda.
And this is a podcast where we break down our favorite reality TV shows and just dive into the craziness that ensues. This week, we're looking at episode 5 of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Ladies Who Lunch.
And we pick up where we left off with some drama happening.
At the Met Gala Luncheon. Again, our namesake.
Exactly, because it's the place to be, like you right now listening to our podcast.
Yeah. But unlike the Met Gala Luncheon in the show, you won't be leaving feeling awkward and uncomfortable, hopefully.
And you, fortunately, you not will not be leaving with Louis Vuitton headphones, but
maybe one day.
Yeah,
maybe use our code. No. But yeah, so we have the second part of the Met Gala Luncheon where we kind of left it off last week with Jen and Mary kind of starting to blow up. And here we kind of see what's happening. Jen is opening up about her life growing up and what her life is like growing up in Salt Lake City. And she brings up this point saying that she says everything that everyone else is thinking out loud. And Mary had a problem with that.
Yeah, I think that basically Mary was just trying to say, no, you just say what you're thinking, and this is your way of justifying getting away with being me.
Yeah. Although the way she said it very much sounded like, I'm better than you, and I would never say anything that you think or say, because you're so, like, unrefined.
Right.
And not on my level.
Exactly. Which, of course, then went all the way down to Jen being called a hoodlum.
Yeah, which is just, Mary knows what she's doing when she calls Jen a hoodlum, or what she's saying or doing as ghetto. Like, that's intentionally trying to hurt her and have a dig at Jen. So, like, we come into this luncheon to kind of iron things out. Like, that's the guise of this whole thing. But as Jen is cut, yes, maybe you could say she's kind of giving herself a pass for what her personality because of her upbringing. And that's just the way she is, and you have to accept it because she's just a very fiery personality. Mary isn't really doing much to try to really iron things out.
No, and she breaks her first rule, which is Jen becomes super, I mean, I think for Jen, she was trying to be very honest and open with where she was coming from, and at least she was trying to open up, which is what Mary said she wanted. But then when she did, Mary stomped on her. And it's funny because you kind of see that, you know, Mary very upfront, an hour before Jen started sharing, said, hey, everyone gets to speak. Nobody gets to chime in. But she went in for the kill, which was really, really, I think, pretty mean.
And then she had the audacity to say, oh, I didn't know I could do that. I don't remember saying, who said that? Who said that? She said that. And yeah, she just doesn't want to follow her own rules. She really did set up that whole luncheon to just be mean to Jen, you know, because she was telling Lisa how she didn't want to invite Jen in the first place. But then she does it anyway because she wants to, you know, for the sake of the group. But then when push comes to shove, she doesn't want to mend fences with Jen. She just wants to get back at her for Jen calling her a grandpa MF-er.
Yeah, that's pretty clear once that kind of all plays out. Because honestly, I hate to say it, but at this point, I'm going to take Jen's side because Jen actually came into that whole luncheon saying, okay, I'll be cordial. I don't want to have a problem with these ladies. And so I'll just try to eat and stay under the table, not knowing that she's going to be put on the hot seat.
Yeah, I mean, like, she was following Jen's instructions of sharing something about herself, and then Jen kind of just poo-pooed her and kind of made her feel bad. And we also get to find out some more stuff about, I guess, Jen and Mary's relationship, some background information. Because obviously, the You Smell Like Hospital mess wasn't the only thing underlying their conflict. Because she tells us about the 7-Eleven comment that she makes, saying that if there are black people at a 7-Eleven, she just goes to a different 7-Eleven. So, I mean, obviously that sparked something in Jen because she has black sons, black nephews, black family members, and her husband's black.
And culturally, as she said, she's been treated black ever since she's been in Salt Lake City. So even though that's ethnically not what she is, she knows exactly how you get treated if you have a certain skin color.
No, exactly. And I think it's she says it best, Jen, where she's like, you know, she when she met Mary, she thought, oh, finally, another woman of color knows what it's like living in Salt Lake City. We can really bond and it'll be nice to be on the show and with someone who gets where I'm coming from. But Mary just seems to be living in her own alternate reality and just refusing to see what's in front of her.
Exactly. It's very strange to me that she really kind of backs away from her own cultural identity there. And it really is another thing where I think she's trying to set it up, and she did a pretty good job of setting it up, where she's just like, oh, you know, Jen's just really jealous of me. And that's where all of this is coming from. It has nothing to do with the fact that I can maybe be offensive, or I don't really understand or listen to other people and where they're coming from. Because when I'm done, I just say things like, oh, well, you know, maybe she should drink some water, or like, you know, you're a hoodlum, or something where you just diminish everything as opposed to really actively listening to what's going on. I think she was just waiting, like you said, to pounce on Jen when she made herself vulnerable.
Because I also feel like I entered this Met Gala luncheon not necessarily Team Mary, because what she said definitely was not nice, and I don't think she should have said that. I didn't think that Jen's reaction was proportionate to what Mary had said. So I guess I was not Team Mary, but I also wasn't Team Jen. But I've left this luncheon 100% Team Jen. She like actually came out with some facts, and she seemed very reasonable, which is, you know, totally against what we've been saying the last 4 episodes we've done now. So, you know, I'm willing to admit that we were wrong.
And I guess, you know, we can say that means that the Bravo editors are really good, because they are playing with your emotions at the edit bay. But and I think they're just both very strong personalities. And it's also interesting to watch the other ladies. I mean, I think they're a little horrified.
Yeah, they definitely don't know how to react to the situation. And to be honest, if I was at that luncheon, I wouldn't know how to react either, because I don't think any normal person has really experienced a lunch like that, where people are just screaming across the table in public.
Right. And I think it was really brave of both Heather and Whitney to try to delve in there, even though they kind of got slapped down. But I think they both made really good points. I mean, I think they were just trying to say, hey, why don't you examine what you're actually doing? Like, you know, Jen made herself vulnerable and you slapped her down and you talked when you shouldn't have. And, you know, Mary just went straight over that. And she was just like, you know, I don't really care. And I'm just now, I didn't want her to be here. And she's offending Walter
and Arturo.
Arturo. And then they're like, wait a minute, I know Walter and Arturo. So,
yeah, I mean, really, though, Mary's again still in the wrong here, because she's embarrassing the whole group, really, but mainly Jen, by calling her a hoodlum and just like attacking her. Kind of really just pecking at her. And she's embarrassing her in public, which I think is way worse than anything Jen has ever, you know, quote unquote, done to Mary. Like, call her a grandpa MF-er, because at the end of the day, she is. So where do you go from there?
Well, that's true. And it was really valiant to see Whitney kind of was just like, hey, I may be the youngest one here, but I'm kind of the more mature one here. And yeah, it's kind of interesting to see that she was basically like the Greek chorus saying, okay, all of this that's going on is really bad.
Yeah, because I mean, like, she was trying to like help mediate the situation and calm things, like de-escalate. And then Mary was like, what do you know? You're 30. And really, like she said, she might be 30 or, you know, in her 30s, but the rest of them were acting like they were 10.
Exactly. They weren't being in any way. And it was just weird. I guess the thing that was also weird about that, I get that, you know, Jen first stormed off and then she actually came back, right? Because
yeah, but I mean, Mary did kick her out. She was like, you know where the door is, leave.
Right. I know. But and at that point, yeah, I guess you're told to leave. But I think it was pretty brave of her to come back to try to figure out how to clear the air, which is what, again, Mary said she wanted to do.
Yeah. And then when Heather kind of pointed that out, because she forced Jen back in and was saying that, y'all need to figure this out because this was the whole point of the luncheon. You said it yourself. We're here to iron things out and get things out on the table so that we can better understand each other and have a good time. And then Mary calls her two-faced because Heather was pointing out Mary's own hypocrisy. And so really, Mary seems to feel like she's beyond reproach.
I just find it funny. I mean, it's one of those things where you're almost like, they don't like each other because they're so much alike. Because basically, Jen was like, oh, hey, look, Meredith's talking to Lisa. Or Meredith's talking to Mary, so you can't be my friend. And now Heather's like, well, you're kind of taking her side, so you can't be my friend. So, like, literally, they both do the same kinds of things, where you have to pick a side and be on that side, and if you're not, you're not their friend. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of both Mary and Jen where they're a little bit like each other temperamentally in how they see things. So, yeah, that was interesting. And again, I felt bad for everybody sitting around that table. I also felt bad again for Arturo and
Walter.
It's really funny. At some point, someone said, you know, asked him on, I think, one of the other interviews they did after the show. And they're like, you know, who's seen Walter? And they're like, oh, we see him all the time. He doesn't really care.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, the type of people, and you know, that are going to Salt Lake City, you know, people with money. And it seemed like an expensive restaurant. So, I mean, he probably has has handled a few fights in his days.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's got to be a good restaurant, right? It's across the street from
P.F. Chang's.
Exactly.
So the national chain.
It's up there in the
some good orange chicken.
Exactly. So, yeah. Jen could have got some orange chicken to go.
On the way out, yeah. But then you see Jen finally does leave. And Mary was asking for her gift back. Oh, could someone pass me that Louis Vuitton box? Which I feel is like so tacky. If you give someone a gift, even if something blows up afterwards, you gave that person a gift. So you can't take that back.
Yeah, but as far as I'm sure, like, Jen was just like, I don't want your gift if you're going to be this rude to me, which I don't think she just stormed off and forgot it. She was just like, I don't want your gift. And which is all good and fine, which is respectable. And that's good. But the other thing is like Mary could have picked that up at the end. What does she think? Heather was going to pocket it or something, or somebody around that table had like shifty fingers, or she thought a waiter was going to take it. I mean, you don't have to make such a big show of I'm taking it back, because that just shows how petty you are. And, you know, we're starting to see this side of Mary where, honestly, you know, with the first few episodes, you were starting to feel a little sympathy for her, and you were starting to see her in a light where, like, okay, well, she had this arranged marriage, and, you know, it wasn't necessarily the life she wanted, but now she has it, and she's making the best of it, and she has a son, and then you're like, oh, and Jen's being so unreasonable because she's, you know, giving her a hard time because she may have said something offhanded. But every episode now, you're just seeing parts of Mary where, like, this is not attractive or Christian or any of those things.
Yeah, no, with each episode, my like of Mary diminishes. And to be honest, the like wasn't a lot to start with. Which also props to the editing room at Bravo. I mean, we know how great their edits are and how shady really they are. But yeah, each episode we peel back that onion layer and I'm just crying more and more each layer.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So we move on, unfortunately, from the wonderful Met Gala luncheon to actually seeing Whitney.
Yeah, we actually see Whitney going to her, I believe, half-brother,
yeah,
Jujutsu studio, which is actually pretty cool because we see her tackle her brother a couple times. I mean, they were talking about serious topics, but you have this montage of her flipping her brother 3-4 times, which, you know, looking at Whitney, I would have never expected her to be so, I guess, physical.
Hey, she's got that great core from pole dancing.
Oh, so that's a good point. That's a good point. She is athletic. We've already noted that. So it's not much of a leap, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I think she's got a lower center of gravity and a good core, so she can flip him. But no, it was actually really sweet. And we get another glimpse at Whitney where, I'm sorry, they're doing an I mean, I can't see any bad sides to Whitney yet. The editing, you see all these women who are very judgmental of her because of, you know, the way she was in her relationship now and, you know, all these other things. But, you know, she's taking care of her dad. She's like, She talks about the divorces that they went through and, you know, or I'm sorry, the fact that she lived in a family with two divorced parents that then got divorced. So, you know, it was a blended family to start with. And then she and her sister came along and then her dad had this addiction and she took care of him. And she even supported him when he went through rehab and then kind of skipped out on the follow up. But, you know, she was always there. And it was really also nice actually to see Whitney's brother, you know, because as she says in the show, after the divorce, the kids all pick sides depending on, you know, who their parent was. And her half-brother seems to be saying, okay, well, I'm willing to give him a chance. If he's going to do the work, we should kind of rally around and, you know, make things right again. And it was really nice to see that you can have siblings that can overcome the problems their parents have and also see their parents as flawed individuals that also need their love. So that was actually really nice. And it was really just good to see Whitney in a different dynamic. Cause sometimes I think they go the extreme with Whitney. Like, she's the pole dancer. She's the young one. She's the whatever. And so it's nice to see how grounded she really is.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like she's giving us the most, you could say, realness of the cast, maybe bar Heather. But no, I really like her arc. I think she's a really down-to-earth, nice individual, and I'm intrigued to see how that'll play out in the season, because we know anyone who signs up for a reality TV show, probably something else going on there, so I'm sure we'll see some feisty moments.
Yeah, and it's also nice that they go through the whole arc so that after she leaves the jujitsu studio, she goes and she takes her dad to sober living, and she really is like, you can see her becoming the parent, kind of saying, you know, I'm proud of you. I really am glad that you're doing this. But she takes him on a rainy day with his TV in the back of the truck.
I know. I don't know if any of y'all noticed that, but there was a TV in the bed there of their truck. And I was, you know, honestly, I'm getting worried for that TV. I hope it made it.
Yeah. So, you know, because in sober living, you got to have something to...
Well, you have something to do. You got to replace one addiction with another, right?
I know. You got to be able to stream whatever you can.
Exactly.
Or binge whatever
binge
you need to.
Binge a new Real Housewives episode.
Exactly.
I wonder if he's watching the show.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
interesting. I'd be intrigued to hear his perspective looking back on himself.
Right. And so then we go back to another ladies kind of, you see Meredith.
Yes.
And she is picking up her husband.
Yeah, he just flew in from Ohio because I guess he now has a corporate headquarters in, I believe, Akron. I don't really know Ohio very well, so don't at me at this. But she picks him up at the airport expecting, you know, to be like a very kind of light, breezy thing. Like, oh, hey, how are you doing? How's it going? Because again, they're dating. They're like supposed to be having fun.
And she even says, let's treat this like a first date.
Yeah.
And for the first, I don't know, minute and a half, it's going okay. Like, he's kind of excited about the fact that it's like a first date. And he's excited about her picking him up. But just like for a minute. Like when
they're getting in the car. No, because I mean, like even then though, he's treating her like, oh, well, you never pick me up from the airport. You never do this. What's up? What's going on with this?
That's true at the very, very beginning. But then when he gets in the car and she says that, he becomes like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should just, you know, be nice and light about this. But that lasts for a whole about minute. And then we get into it again.
Yeah, because then he asks her, oh, will you move to Ohio?
After ski season, right? He's like, are you going to be moving to Ohio? Because I think he's in Canton.
Oh, Canton, yeah.
Yeah, and then, but he said they could live in Akron, which I believe is a bigger town.
Yeah, which is close to Cleveland. I had to look it up.
So anyway, so yeah, but then he makes this whole argument about, you know, what's more important, you know, the person you're with or the place you're at. And honestly, when he goes through all of his arguments and she then describes how many times she's had to move for him, it's like, yeah, at some point you get tired of doing that. And like, what is the point after a while? I understand that you make some, you know, sacrifices in your marriage, but she was just saying she's never really even gotten to enjoy things with her kids because she's constantly moving.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've moved to like 4+ different cities for his job. And we have to remember, too, that she has her own business. And I can't even imagine how hard that must be to keep moving your quote-unquote corporate headquarters every 6-7 months.
Right, and it doesn't sound like she, I mean, at least when she was first starting, and let's face it, who do we not know that doesn't have a jewelry line sometime in their life? So, I mean, it's kind of hard to get traction. So literally, I guess the thing is that it's hard to get something up and rolling. And it sounds like when they moved to Salt Lake City, she found her sweet spot. She found a niche. She found, you know, people who were buying her jewelry. She obviously is not a cheap, it's not very, you know, it's not like a cheap jewelry line. It's very expensive. So it's not easy to kind of build that business and then all of a sudden say, oh yeah, well, I'm now going to move this $14,000 whatever, you know, a piece thing to Canton, Ohio, where I'm going to have oh so many people coming in to buy my stuff.
Yeah, that's just not her client base at all. And I get, well, her client base and his client base are so different. They're just diametrically opposed. So, I mean, it doesn't really make much sense why she would move to Akron, especially since they're in this kind of state of limbo of separation. So I totally get why she wouldn't want to move. And it seems like they had just moved to Salt Lake City because she's still furnishing her home. And so that's a very much a in the moving phase of moving into a house. So it seems like she hasn't even finished unpacking and he's already asking, oh, well, why don't you want to leave?
Right. So I think that, you know, in some ways, you know, he's the one that's just kind of saying, you know, you need to be the little woman and move for me. And if you don't want to do that, then I'm not. And I'm glad she turns it around on him and says, well, why don't you want to just move here?
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing, because he was saying that, oh, well, I would move anywhere for you, which is just a blatant lie. I mean, how did he not know that was going to get, like, thrown into his face? Because they are living in Salt Lake City, and as she says, her corporate headquarters is in Salt Lake City, so if he really would move anywhere for her, then why wouldn't he just move to where they already own a house?
Exactly. Plus, I mean, and honestly, I guess at this point, I'm sure one of the things he's thinking is, you know, the kids are all out of school, it doesn't matter anymore. But I think she's just having PTSD from the entire marriage. Like, she was like, I was never happy having to get up and move all the time. And kind of now I don't have these extra responsibilities of carting kids around and I can really focus on my business and it's going well and I'm happy here and I have friends and everything seems to be. And now, I mean, in some cases, and this happens a lot in marriages, where if you have the kids to focus on, sometimes it kind of patches over all the other bad things that are happening in your marriage because you have to deal with the kids. And once, you know, those kids aren't around or they don't need you to be there for them as much, then, you know, the cracks really start to show.
Yeah. But then we get into another scene with them where they're talking. They're at their house now, I guess, post airport, obviously. And they're talking about how Meredith might need some space and that maybe their relationship won't last.
Yeah, I think the idea that they need some space is probably the best thing for their marriage. And, you know, if he's going to take this hard line, I don't see it really working out. I really don't. It doesn't look like it's a salvageable thing. I think that, I mean, she's very sad about it, like most people would be. I'm sure this is, you know, obviously someone she's, you know, the father of her children. It's somebody that she really cared about. It's somebody she's made, you know, incredible sacrifices for.
I mean, I have no doubt that she doesn't love him. I believe that there is still love there, but as I'm sure many people know, like, there's a difference between loving someone and being in love with someone, and, you know, you have to kind of just accept that.
Right. And you can almost tell at the very end of that scene, she's just so sad when he says, well, maybe if I leave, you know, and I'm away, you'll see that, you know, your life is better without me in it. And she goes, I think that that might be true. And so I think at that point, she really nails what she's feeling, you know, instead of having this back and forth. It's just like, I need the space. I need you not here. And this isn't really working. But we'll see. I mean, obviously, it looks like there's a lot we're going to have to dive into about their relationship.
Yeah. And on a lighthearted side note, if anyone noticed, in that scene in the bedroom where they're talking about the demise of their marriage, so really cheery stuff, in the background behind Meredith is a bear poster or a painting. I don't even know. Maybe a photo. And if you remember or rewind back to the art gallery episode, you see that same bear painting. So clearly she bought something there. I thought that was an interesting add-in because she's all like, oh, I have a very elegant, monochrome, simple design ideas. And here she has this like big, very colorful bear in her bedroom, which is like standing, towering over her. I don't know. That's just like not something I'd want in my bedroom. It is, I mean, honestly, bold choice, and I kind of like her more for doing it.
Yeah, I know. It's almost like that big bear is like the or their marriage. It's just like over her and overarching. It's about to
pounce. About to eat her.
Exactly. So now we move over to Meredith's twin, Lisa.
Oh, yes. Oh, Lisa. We start kind of this conversation with Lisa. We see her at her son's 8th birthday party. Honestly, whatever. We don't care about the birthday party. But her next conversation is about marriage, and that kind of spurs off of the conversation that her and her husband were having at the 8th birthday party about Meredith and Seth's separation. And she was talking about how, I guess, in the Mormon church, again, I'm learning so much about the Mormon church and their beliefs and things. I'm sure it's totally not representative of the church as a whole. But anyways, I want to take it as fact. But they were saying how marriage is forever, like eternal, which is a really long time to be with someone.
I know, at least in all the other denominations that I know of, it's till death do us part. I mean, you kind of have this rosy thought of, you know, oh, you die, you go and meet your husband. But that's not what the contract says. Death do us part.
Yeah, I mean, because you could die and then maybe meet somebody else.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Have like, you'll be like a Mormon in heaven. You'll have multiple wives or husbands.
But then that also brings up a logistical question. I believe Mormons believe in hell. I'm not sure. But let's go with that. But what happens if one partner is in hell and the other partner is in heaven? Like, is the marriage still there? Is the other partner just kind of forced to be in heaven and not do anything?
I think, you know, the way that Mormonism seems to work, you know, where you have to be perfect and all these other things, is that if your partner's in hell, I think you have to go down and join them because they're not going to let an imperfect person into heaven. So I think you are literally tied to that person. You need to make sure. I think that's why they try to make sure. I think she talks about this, like having this family dynamic that Mormonism is about the eternal family, right? And so I think that's
scary thought.
I know. So I think that part of that is that you keep each other honest so that you both enter heaven. So it's not like going to be one of these things. But still, we've seen like, and we've heard about sneaky Mormons. So we know that there are people who are not keeping up to their
perfectionist goals.
Exactly. So.
And then I feel bad for Lisa's husband because then she talks about how when she's mad at him, she's thrown out his Rolexes out the car window, I guess, while they're driving.
Right. That was really funny because that was in the confessional. And basically what happened was the producer was like, you did go back to get it. And she's like, yeah, but it was really hard because it was in a snowbank. And I was like,
yeah. And like, she didn't go back to get it. He went to go back and get it. And like, Rolexes are so expensive. Again, rich people do not deserve money. They just literally throw, like, how much is an average Rolex?
I don't know. It could be anywhere from 5,000 to 100,000, I think.
Okay. We're throwing out a $5,000+ watch. I mean, let's be honest, it's probably like $20,000-$30,000 out of a moving car. Like, who does that? Like, that could give someone a home. That's some people's whole yearly salary. Like, these people live such vapid lives, which I guess is why we like to watch them. But, you know, sometimes it's jarring to hear it, you know, when you're not thinking about it.
Right. And I think that part of it is that Lisa is trying to, at least when she's talking to her husband about it, she's kind of saying things like, you know, you should just worship me and I shouldn't have to do things for presents. And he's like, would you?
He's like, please perform services.
So, yeah. So we see a little bit of their marriage and, you know, it seems like a pretty typical marriage. She pretty much rules the roost in that house, you can tell.
Oh, for sure.
So then we move on and we see another marriage and how it works, which is something Jen has talked about in the very first episode, which is basically her FaceTime marriage with Sharif.
Yeah. And they actually have a nice heart-to-heart, which I'm actually surprised they're that he was allowed to take a phone call midday because you'd think he'd be practicing. But regardless, Jen was giving Sharif the 411 about what happened at the luncheon, which I guess since they have a FaceTime marriage, that would be the first opportunity she could have told him. But moving on, she was giving him the 411 and she was talking about the 7-Eleven comment and how Mary called her a hoodlum and ghetto. And I think, again, this just further reinforces how Jen is totally in the right here, and I really don't see anything redeemable of what Mary has done or said. And so, yeah, I'm team Jen.
Yeah, for this one, I am too. And basically, it's really nice that Sharif is, it's really funny. It sounds like he's talking to one of his players when he's talking, I'm really proud of you, and, you know, he's going on. And so you can see how he'd be a good coach.
Oh, yeah, he seems like such a great guy, honestly.
Super motivational, super, like, you know, very good at pointing out, like, what you personally did right and, you know, how you shouldn't let these things affect you and you should basically stick to your guns. And so it was a nice conversation. So we see a very nice, healthy looking marriage, even though it's, you know, again, here you have somebody else. Like, I'm not sure it wasn't clear that Sharif has been a coach anywhere else. So not that they've had to move around too many times, but his job takes him everywhere, like during football season. And then I think during he probably does, you know, spring recruitment and all these other things. So, you know, he is probably away a lot. And so, and he leaves Jen alone, which I think in some cases is part of our problem with Jen, is that she feels lonely, so she has to fill up that time with things with aid assistance.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I think I would honestly really like to see a kind of circa 2010, 2011 style Beverly Hills dads kind of scenes, you know, where not the dads, but, you know, the husbands, where all the husbands would go out to drinks and you would get to see that. Like, I kind of want to see the Salt Lake City housewives, all of their husbands get together and just see how that's like. I mean, I don't know how that would work with Sharif's schedule, but I think that would be cute.
Well, it would be cute. But the thing is I think that in the case of Beverly Hills, a lot of those guys were, they kind of travel in the same circles. Whereas I'm not sure that that's really true for the Salt Lake City guys.
That's true. It could be really awkward. Yeah. I just want to see more of Coach Shaw.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of what Coach Shaw and Robert Sr. would have to talk about.
Oh, God. You're right. You know, I take that statement back. I don't want to see any more of Robert Sr.
Yeah, I think we're good.
But speaking of Robert Sr., we have all of this Jen unloading to Sharif juxtaposed with Mary unloading to Robert Sr. And she is just living in La La Land. Like, she is so delusional about what's going on between her and Jen, and really her and the rest of the group, because she sees herself as kind of this queen bee figure, when all of us can see she's the one on the outskirts. Like, she is one comment away from getting kicked out of this group.
Yeah, definitely. And you can also see where, you know, where you have kind of a more, Sharif is kind of much more assertive and has a place. You know, Robert Sr., you know, basically it's kind of sad because it's almost like you look at both of them and they're like, they're in this, I don't know if it's a love marriage or not a love marriage. It doesn't sound like one to me, honestly, from looking in. And yes, it was an arranged marriage, but it was an arranged marriage for the same reason for both of them, for the money. Like it, and so he feels, because that money came from Mary's grandma, that he has to basically kowtow to her and say, oh, honey, yeah, you're right. And this isn't wrong. And yes, they're just jealous. And I mean, obviously she pitches it that way. So from him not being there, he sees it that way. But it's just kind of crazy. I mean, the things that she said were, again, as you know, they were pretty indefensible. Like, I don't know how anyone can kind of be on Mary's side and say, well, especially when she starts talking about, you know, she just belittles it, right? It's like, I don't like hospitals. I don't like convenience stores. It's like if you're Mary's friend, you somehow have to know all the things and topics that are going to set her off. Because if you bring them up, then, you know, somehow you're doing it just to injure her.
Yeah.
So the other thing that's hilarious is she's like, she then sets the whole argument up to be like, Jen is the problem. She's the rotten apple. There's always one person that screws it up for everybody. And she doesn't realize that she's that person.
Yeah, she's definitely the rotten apple of the bunch. And she's really bringing everyone else down. And I don't know how you watch that Met Gala scene and see Mary as the victim or the sympathetic. She's the instigator. She kicked Jen out. She said really mean things to her. And then, oh, but woe is me. I wish I live in that fantasy land of I'm right, everyone else is wrong.
Yeah, and then we go again to a housewife and housewife dinner. Again, it's either everybody's there causing drama or they're one-on-one. And then it's just kind of an odd pairing. You know, basically it's Mary and Heather having dinner. And it was really strange because, you know, basically Mary told Heather she was two-faced.
Yeah, I don't, like, personally, if I thought someone was two-faced, why would I want to go have dinner with them? And then on the flip side, as Heather, like, if someone called me two-faced, I'd be like, fine. I don't need to be friends with you if you think that about me. So I don't get why they're having dinner, but nonetheless, they are. So they're talking about what happened, what really went down. And we get to hear more about Mary's delusions. But before that,
yeah, we get the best line of the entire episode, which was, again, Mary drops some pearls of wisdom down there because the waiter comes to find out if they want water. And so the subject of carbonated water comes up. And Mary's like, you know, carbonation affects your ovaries.
Which to me, though, is she thinking about having another child? I don't get it. I mean, also, where did she find this information? WhatsApp?
Yeah, I don't know. This is hilarious. And then the great thing is Heather's like, I'll take two.
I know, because she's like, I don't want to have any more kids, which honestly, I totally get that. But yeah, I don't know where Dr. Mary gets her. I mean, first, we have water will save your legs, but now carbonated water does not have the same healing effects. It fucks up your ovaries. So watch out, ladies.
Or if you're looking for a different form of birth control and you don't want to like take any chemicals, carbonated water. Yeah, yeah.
But why ovaries specifically? Why not the whole reproductive system?
I'll have to check with Dr. Mary. So if anyone out there listening knows why carbonation is...
And is it only carbonated water that affects your reproductive or ovaries, I should say?
I don't know. I had a lot of fizzy drinks and I was able to have you, so.
And a pitcher of margarita.
That's true. So I was a little housewifey before Sarah turned up. Anyway, so then we have Mary then going over all of her problems with Jen Shaw.
Yeah, she pretty much listed it out for us and I kind of wrote them down. But she, one, thinks that Jen is jealous of what she has because Jen would not be used to seeing a black woman have money and power because Jen has no relation to anyone that's black that has money or power.
Yeah, it's really odd. Jen, who had the, I don't know, what'd you say, $40,000, like, birthday party.
Yeah, like $46,000 birthday party. She lives in
for
a freaking chalet. And her husband is like one of the top black football coaches. So I think she has a little idea.
And she's rocking those like 6-inch Louboutins all the time.
I think she has just a little bit of money. So this whole idea that
she has eight assistants.
Yeah, she has eight assistants.
On the payroll.
I just genuinely don't know where Mary comes up with these things. I mean, she really just pulls them out of her ass. And honestly, commendable. Because I'd get too stuck in my head about that not just being true at all. But, you know, she just goes for the delusion.
Yeah. And so, and then she says Jen's being racist, which I really don't understand.
Yeah. She, again, delusion. And she.
No proof, no like what it was that actually did it, other than she said, I don't think she's ever seen a black person with this much stuff.
And like, she's like.
It's like she's seen her husband.
No, exactly. And like, she also. Was saying, Mary was saying that Jen was jealous because she's not Queen Bee or MVP, and she didn't like that she wasn't number one, which, let's be real, Jen probably is number one of this group. She is the biggest personality. Everyone comes and hails to her side. So I don't know where Mary's getting this idea that she's the, you know, circus leader.
I thought this was just an interesting, well, it was an interesting episode in some ways. It was a little, it wasn't as exciting in some ways, but it was interesting to me in watching this kind of in the scope of what we've kind of gone through this past summer. And the fact that you have these two women of color who have these totally different ideas of race, and they obviously, you know, come from a different socioeconomic background, they have different upbringings. But the weird thing to me was watching this, was watching the white women not know how to discuss race. Like, Heather tried a little bit, I think, but not really. And nobody ever said, you know, I mean, at some point, someone, as opposed to you hearing it off camera, you know, in these little snippets to, you know, either other housewives or to husbands, at some point you feel that one of these white girls should have just said, hey, this is inappropriate. What you just said is wrong. And, you know, but I just felt like they were just on the sideline watching, which is kind of basically exerting their white privilege to not get involved.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just in typical housewives fashion. I don't expect any of these women to be up on race politics and feel comfortable enough to talk about race.
No, I understand. But I mean, basically, the things that Jen was saying to me was actually more like, I am maybe not racially Black, but I understand it because it's been my experience. Whereas Mary just doesn't talk about it at all. And the only, you know, view you have in on her is basically my family had money and I don't, you know, have to deal with it.
Yeah. And my thing, though, it's like what Sharif said. You know, there are Black people who don't like other Black people.
No, and that's exactly what Mary is, I think. Black person who doesn't really appreciate other Black people.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, when Jen had that first interaction with her, like, oh, another person of color who gets what I'm going through and what we're both going through, I don't think Mary had that same reaction.
No, I don't think so at all. So, but, you know, again, they are both the mothers of Black sons.
Yeah.
And you think that Mary would, like, worry about her son.
Well, I think she kind of just lives in this, like, insulated bubble.
Yeah, no, no, and that's basically how it is. But, I understand it's Salt Lake City. You know, the women were brought up in a certain kind of way. There weren't any Black people around. That was the interesting thing, too, about going back to race issues from episode one when Jen's talking about marrying Sharif. I mean, it took Sharif to, like, point out that there were no other Black people in the Mormon church for her to go, oh, well, then I want to be part of this. I'm like, you didn't notice the entire time you were there that that wasn't a thing?
Well, that's my other thing, too, though. So, like, they have completely different lived experiences. Because, well, I don't understand how Jen wouldn't be cognizant of that fact.
But she says it, which is really
odd.
No,
I know, but she says that her lived experience living in Salt Lake City is that of a Black woman. But then she didn't even notice that there weren't any other people of color or Black people in the church.
No, that's what I mean. And it took Sharif to say that. And she's like, oh, okay, well, then I need to quit.
So, I mean, that's just kind of questionable.
I mean, I'm not sure exactly the Muslims are really happening with Assalamu alaikum, bitches.
I mean, she drinks, so
that's
I don't
true.
Think she's the perfect
She's not
going to
be a strict Muslim.
But yeah, to end it kind of on a more light note, thankfully, this episode is not a two-parter. We finally get rest. I'm so thankful. Thank you, Bravo gods.
Yeah, exactly.
No more two-parters. I am begging you. No more. Please. Free us from this torture.
Yeah, we're done with the two-parters for at least one episode. We'll see. We'll check in. We'll check in on our next podcast and we'll find out whether we are either at a cliffhanger again or not.
I can't say I'm very hopeful.
But anyway, till next time.
That's our progress. Thank you so much. If you wouldn't mind leaving us a like, comment, subscribe, leave us a review, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.